Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
And welcome to episode 29 of the SJP Wrestling Podcast. As always, thank you very, very much for pressing play and having a listen to my show. And on today's show, we are speaking with Simon Quest, someone who has just come through the Evolution Wrestling Training Academy in Gloucester, someone who has just worked his first proper match, someone who stands at around 6'4", 6'5" tall, you would think would be a perfect fit for this crazy world of professional wrestling. However, it's took him to the age of 35 to decide to do this. It's a really interesting story about Simon's own wrestling fandom, his training process, things he found easy, things he struggled with. It's a great tale, really interesting story. I hope you all find it as interesting as I did. Before we get to that today, though, just a little bit of quick housekeeping for you. I'd love it if you would all please go and follow the show on the social media accounts we have. We have an Instagram, a Facebook, and a Twitter, and you can find the show at SJP Wrestling Pod. Let us know what you like, what you dislike, what you'd like to hear more of, less of, and so on, whether it's old show reviews, modern product reviews, more interviews, anything at all. Any feedback helps me shape the show to be whatever you want to hear. Okay, that's kind of everything I need to cover today. Again, thank you very, very much for listening, and let's get to our talk with the excellent Simon Quest.
Hello, brother. This is NWA WCW Enhancement Talent Randy Hogan, baby. Being in the ring with the Road Warriors, Vader, Abdul the Butcher, Midnight Express, and all them guys, let me tell you, it was dang rough. But not as rough as listening to Siamags on that Chain Wrestling show, brother. What you gonna do when this pair of fools, Siamags and Chain Wrestling, brother, runs wild on you?
Simon Quest, welcome to the SJP Wrestling Podcast. Delighted to have you along. How are you doing, sir?
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for having me. I am absolutely fantastic. Keeping spirits high. I think light's at the end of the tunnel soon with everything we're going through. I'm buzzing. Can't wait for life to return back to normal. Yeah, full of it. How are you doing, Simon? You all right?
Yeah, not too bad. You know, sort of a little bit of context time-wise for everyone, I guess.
Yes,
this is, we're recording the 10th of February. I imagine this will be out a week or so after that date, but we're very much still in a big lockdown in the UK, but the vaccines are getting rolled out and so on, so hopefully things are looking up. I mean, how has the whole COVID situation affected you personally? Has it affected you a great deal at home or anything?
I'm quite lucky to have a very stable job, and I know there are others out there that aren't as in such a privileged position. That being said, it sounds like a first world problem to complain about homeschooling your own kids. That does take a toll, I must admit, to be a parent, a teacher, a best mate, all in one go and make sure everyone's being looked after. But hey, you know what? It's one of those things. In 5 years' time, 10 years' time, we're going to be looking back at this period in our life. This is what they're going to study in schools. And I just want to be on the right side of history, you know, remain positive, looked after my family. It run us all ragged. It was, you know, less than ideal, but we got through it. And that's my outlook on it at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. That's what I'm trying to explain to my kids. My youngest is, she's just turned 11.
Oh, wow.
And they obviously it sucks for them. They're not seeing their friends. I mean, my youngest is very close to her cousin. She speaks to her every day on the phone and plays little online games and so on, so that they're still in contact. But my middle daughter as well, she finds it quite difficult. She's played football, so she's lost out on that social side.
Sure.
She's seen her mate, and she's a very, very social kid, so that's sort of stung her a great deal. And my two eldest, my son is spending lockdown living at his girlfriend's, so I haven't seen him for quite a duration of time. And my eldest daughter lives with her mum, who's from a previous relationship of mine. So she's I haven't seen her for a good duration of lockdown either. So it's been quite difficult for me with the kids in general. But I keep trying to say to them, you are, as crap as it is now, you are effectively living through history. This is going to get spoke about for, you know, decades after. This is going to be in textbooks when their great grandkids are going to school, and they're going to learn about what we did during this crazy time, I guess.
Yeah, you're right, and I'm sorry to hear that about you know, you and your family, because that must take a toll on yourself. And that's the other thing I tell a lot of people. It's because it's very easy to fall into the trap of thinking, oh, there's always people out there that's got it worse than I have, so what have I got to complain about? But mental health is contextual. You know, your world is what's in front of you. If something's going to get you down, it's going to get you down. So you know, I'm sure it sounds like your kids are doing great. Like you said, they are resilient, and my kids are too. And you know, you're going to look after them the best way you can. So, light at the end of the tunnel, my friend. I think the future isn't cancelled. 6 months' time, I'm positive we'll have some semblance of normality.
Okay, so I mean, the main reason I asked you on is because I think we've got quite a unique little story to tell here. you've been training for quite a short period of time, at an age where potentially a lot of people don't necessarily think about starting to train. And this was brought to my attention when I did a little commentary for Evolution Wrestling and an internet YouTube show they were putting on. And it turns out I actually put the commentary on your first ever match, but this was relatively recent when you look at the bigger time scale. So that's kind of why I invited you on, because I thought it's your training time and so on has been through lockdown, so it's going to be a completely different tale to other people I've spoken to. But I mean, before we get to that, let's go back and start at the beginning, I guess. How did you initially discover wrestling? How did you first find this crazy, crazy world?
Yeah, sure. Now, I mean, let's get the elephant in the room out of the way. So I am in my mid-30s. I am 35. You know, there are stories out there with people starting.
Chicken, mate, 35.
Yeah, well, like everyone keeps saying to me, DDP, Diamond Dallas Page, he started when he was 35. But yeah, so I am a little bit on the more sort of seasoned side, and I have picked up this relatively recently. But yes, yeah, so the beginning for me, so being as old as I am, I mean, the very beginning, my first ever memory of wrestling, and I say this to some of the Evolution Wrestling lads, and they laugh at me and they're like, God, you're old, is literally The Undertaker beating Hulk Hogan for the WWF title at the time in 1991. That is literally my first memory of wrestling.
Survivor Series 91, yep.
Yep, Survivor Series 1991. I remember sitting there on the floor, on a cushion, watching it in absolute awe in what I was seeing. Big superhero fan away from wrestling. To me, what I was watching was just real life superheroes. And I was hooked, and it had me in from that point. Back in those days, we were one of the very lucky few to have the 20 or so Sky channels that were about at the time. And wrestling was a big part of Sky One in the early days. I used to be watching all the weekend shows, the recap shows. The colours, the larger-than-life characters, just hooked me. I'm also the eldest of quite a few brothers, seven, as it were. So,
oh,
yeah, so naturally this was a gateway or an excuse rather to playfully scrap amongst ourselves and try and imitate what we've seen on TV. So lots which you can't condone, obviously, but it, you know, we're kids at the end of the day. But it was that is where it began. It's in those early days, early 90s. I'd say that 91 to 93 period was probably my personal golden era. You know, where I had all the Hasbro figures, I had all the all the games that you had for the Super Nintendo. I had the NAF like inflatable stand-ups that you would like punch down and then they pop right back up. I have one specific memory memory of my Macho Man Hulk. I think I had a Hulk Hogan one as well, but it was my Macho Man one that had got a puncture at one point. And I remember me and my mum literally had the whole thing in the bathtub trying to find where this tiny little puncture was so we could repair it and I could get back to just kicking its butt. But it is. And this is the other thing with it. I remember in 1992, and I've only got sort of fleeting memories of it, but there's a couple of things specifically I remember. I did go and watch a UK Rampage show in the NEC.
And oh, why?
I know, exactly. And the main event, and it's the only time I've seen him live, the main event was The Undertaker against Sid. And the two clear memories I have, clear as day memories I have of that particular show, was Undertaker doing the old school, the walk across the top rope. That I just have that image seared in my head. And I also had a bunch of guys behind me in Legion of Doom costumes with some like polystyrene and like just sort of like red wrapping paper wrapped around some like makeshift shoulder pads that were just going absolutely mental through the whole thing and just like creating all this ruckus and starting all the chanting, which I'll come back to as well, which has led to another sort of story and how I got into this. Absolutely mad fond memories of when I was a kid, and it just hooked me from that point. And of course, like everyone does, I've sort of floated in and out of watching it. You sort of have various gradients of like fandom. You're all in, you're all out, sort of thing. But that period there, 91 to 93, was certainly my key period. Shortly after that was when my mum decided that maybe there was a few too many black eyes and bruises going around between me and my brothers, and she might have put a bit of a cap on it. And it wasn't until a bit later, maybe around sort of the 99 period, where I started to really get back into it again. But yeah, that's it. I'm a golden oldie. That was my era.
Yeah, similar sort of time frame to myself, actually. You say 91 there, so I was 91, that's November. One of my earliest memories is the Rockers splitting up on the barbershop.
That was
January 92. I had SummerSlam 89 on videotape bought for me that I basically wore out.
Nice.
And watched that over and over and over again. So a similar sort of time frame to me, I suppose. And it's interesting as well, you mentioned about going on that UK Rampage tour at the NEC in Birmingham. Sid versus The Undertaker. Of course, we're talking 92 there, so that's WrestleMania 8-ish time. Was it 5 years later? That was a WrestleMania main event, wasn't it? Sid versus Undertaker at 13. So there you go. You said a WrestleMania main event, mate.
Do you know what? I'd never pieced that together. But yeah, I guess you're right. It was. But yeah, I will ask you this question then, Simon, if you don't mind me posing one back at you. So given that you were a man of the same era as I was, Hogan or Warrior, who was your guy when you were a kid?
Oh, see, initially it was Warrior. Very early on, it was Warrior. I remember a friend of mine who lived literally straight over the road from me, and he was massively into wrestling, and he sort of helped contribute to getting me into it, I guess. And he had this huge Ultimate Warrior poster on his wall, and I just thought this guy looked incredible with the hair and the tassels, and there was lightning all around him. Shortly after that, I started deviating more towards Hogan. I can't give any reasons as to why, but I've always had a little bit of a soft spot for Hogan, and the whole NWO thing in later years I thought was just really, really cool. So I mean, what about yourself? Which one of the questions I normally ask, who were your early faves? Who were the ones that sort of stand out looking back?
Oh man, you know, it's one of those things, and it's when at the time I was like yourself, like, so again, being a man of a similar age to yourself, He-Man was a massive thing, you know, a massive universe.
Yeah, He-Man figures.
Ultimate Warrior looked like he literally, and I'm sure this is what they were going for in some respect, right? But he literally looked like he could have been lifted out of one of those cartoons. To me, I think I had all three different variants of the Ultimate Warrior Hasbro figure at the time, which I later sold for like £5 in a bundle, which was an absolute massive mistake in retrospect. But yeah, Ultimate Warrior was my guy. And I also felt like I was probably being a bit, I don't know, it sounds silly, but I was like 6 or 7. I was off the grid by liking Warrior instead of Hogan. But then like yourself, you know, time moves on, and Hogan had the longevity, and he ended up making a reappearance in what was it, 2002. And suddenly you're sort of having more of an appreciation for his career and what he's achieved. You know, we'll talk less about like his later life and the man and what he became and all that, but certainly from a character perspective, I think, you know, is one of those things you look back and, yeah, I mean, he was the real deal. He was the superhero. But at the time, certainly, Ultimate Warrior was my guy.
Yeah, I mean, again, coming back to that SummerSlam 89 tape, Hogan was in the main event, and I remember the crowd going absolutely crazy for his music when it hit and so on. And this is one of the first shows or pay-per-views I watched from sort of start to finish, I guess. And like I said, I wore the damn video out. But in the mid-card, you obviously had Rick Rude versus The Warrior, and yeah, that was my favourite match on the show. I loved that. That was absolutely brilliant. Again, a lot of it was down to the Warrior's energy and his just colourful and everything about him. But of course, when you get a bit older, you realise, okay, that match was good because of Rick Rude. He controlled that whole, you know. But at the time, as a little kid watching, I was all about the Warrior. Yeah, definitely on that occasion. But yeah, Hogan kind of did take over for me. I mean, I suppose you mentioned there watching stuff on Sky and so on during that era. Did you ever watch WCW around this time? We had WCW Worldwide on ITV and occasionally on Channel 5, which are two free-to-air stations in the UK, obviously.
Not even in the slightest. I'm an absolute self-proclaimed WWE fanboy, right? So I did. WCW just never came across. In fact, the only time I was even aware of WCW was when I was going down to Merritts in Tesco's in Quedgeley in Gloucester. You'd look at like the wall of figures that you could pick, and you had these like Hasbro characters, which I knew and love, and you had these like WCW figures that just didn't move. You had Ric Flair and you had Arn Anderson. And I'm just like, which is ironic now, what I'm about to say, considering how old I am. But I just like, they just look like old men. What's going on? Yeah. Well, I've got no interest in that whatsoever. Obviously, Sting looked damn cool, right? And you know, there's the connection there with Warrior from their earlier careers, which makes sense. But Sting was clearly like a guy you'd sort of like, he's got my curiosity. But no, literally every video I had, every bit of merch I had was just all WWF at the time orientated.
Okay, see, I used to catch like Superstars or Challenge or whatever it was, Primetime Wrestling or whatever the show was, around my nan's house. She would, my uncle would have Sky in the bedroom, and I'd watch a bit of it there. And then I'd go to football on a Saturday, and I came home, and my mum had a VHS tape at the machine. You know, I'm coming home. It's the same sort of era that you have like Bullseye and Gladiators, and all that was on. You know, Knight Rider was on in the afternoon, and that sort of thing. WCW Worldwide, which I suppose at the time was their sort of Velocity or their Sunday Night Heat, maybe it's like their, you know, their small highlight ish show, was being shown on ITV, and this was very early 90s. So my mum said, "I've recorded you some wrestling." So I'm buzzing, thinking I'm going to sit down and watch, you know, Superstars or some WWF. Anyway, take it upstairs to my bedroom where I got my own little VCR. Shoves it in there, presses play, and I remember being absolutely devastated when it came on, because it was dingy, it was dark, the production was nowhere near as good, and it was all squash matches. But then at the end of the show, Vader came out, and I was just like, whoa, who is this? And then I started watching it on a regular basis, and that was around the time Vader was world champion. I think Ron Simmons had a run at that time as well. I got really into WCW via that as well. So it's just funny how things work out, I guess.
Yeah, it really is. And it's a bit like the whole Hogan thing, where you sort of have a bit of a later appreciation for what WCW was and what it achieved and the contribution to the business in general. I remember a bit later in life, and I'm talking, you know, 98, 99 here, going into a shop, browsing the magazines, as you would, you know, with the shopkeeper over your shoulder saying, like, "Oh, you're going to buy that?"
And yeah, it's not a library.
Exactly. And you would see the magazines for WCW, and I'm there sort of in 98, 99, and I'm seeing Hogan, Luger, Randy Savage. I'm seeing all these characters on. I'm like, really? Because back then, you know, the difference between 1992 and 1998 was massive. You know, that's six years. That's like a good like half of my life ago. And I'm like, I still, again, just had no appreciation for it. And here I am, 35, opening up my wardrobe, and I think I've got a Wolfpack T-shirt. I've got like a Halloween Havoc T-shirt. I've got all this sort of stuff. And it's because now, as an older fan, I can go back and look at the product they had and have an appreciation of just how cool it was. But back then, I was just like, no, it looks an aged product. I don't understand why this is a thing and why people are into it. So, you know, and WWF at the time, and as it proved out to be, was the one that had the edge.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, I mean, so I was getting back to your story then. You mentioned having seven brothers there, all scrapping and play. Your poor parents, man. You, but I know, obviously, one of your brothers is Dale Johnson, who has obviously worked for Evolution Wrestling, and we've had him on the SJP Wrestling Podcast previously. But you're the eldest, I believe. Is that correct?
I am. And Dale's actually youngest. So there's we're both ends of the spectrum, as it were.
Yeah. Okay. But he's been wrestling for a couple of years now, like a year and a half, 2 years at least. Him being the youngest and going into that world, how did you find that? Were you excited to go along and watch him? Did you go along and watch any of his events?
Oh, man. So this is going to sound really mushy. And apologies, Dale, if you do listen to this, because I did have it down to, like, you know, I've got to talk about it. So Dale was, he's the youngest of the family, but he's an absolute inspiration. So Dale was the one. We're all fans of wrestling. I should clarify that now. We, you know, all later in life, we all watch it. We've all traveled to watch shows. We've loved it for so long. Dale was the first person to actually have the confidence to go and give it a go. And yeah, I know he went along and he had like some friends with him that did it, and some of the friends, it wasn't for them, and he still stuck around and he was there not knowing anyone. I'm bigging it up like he's this like scared little 15-year-old. He's not, he's in his early 20s, and he's a really confident guy, as I'm sure you've found, but yeah. But the aptitude he had for it, doing it for, I think he had his first match in what, 10 weeks of doing it. And, watching him in that ring, we were all so stoked. Like me, a couple of my other brothers, my son went along and watched, my dad, our parents were there. We were just, he went through that match and it was just so seamless. And it still maintains to this day, my favorite match from a personal level I've watched of him do. I'm not even gonna lie to you, there was a tear in my eye watching him do it. He was just by taking that plunge and taking that step to do it was truly inspirational for me in my own story, and me actually doing it now a couple of years later. But just that belief he gave everyone in the family, and the passion he's got for it as well. It's just, yeah, I'm so glad he did it, and I'm so glad he's doing so well at it.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very, very talented fella. I've really enjoyed every time I've seen him wrestle. So yeah, you should be proud though. You should be proud. He's very, very talented indeed.
Yeah.
So you say you're 35 and you've not long started training and had your first match. Was this something that ever appealed to you previously? Did you think, I'll give it a go, and never just got round to it? Or did you not have the opportunity? Or was it a case of it never even entered your mind? I mean, to be fair, I mean, you're a big old chap. You're what, 6'4", 6'5"?
I'm 6'5", yeah.
Yeah, so you're 19 stone, I think you told me when I was doing the commentary for your match.
That's right.
It's almost like you tick all the boxes needed. So as a big wrestling fan, being that size, how come it took you to this point to decide, I'm going to do that?
So I'm going to try and keep it concise because I know I have a tendency to waffle, Simon. Apologies.
But no problem at all. No problem at all.
But basically, so this was what I wanted to do. When I was coming out of school, going into college, and we're talking about sort of 2000, 2001, maybe a year or so later than that, and I was looking at my university options, I was specifically looking for a university that had or was in close vicinity to a wrestling school. Now, it's strange, right? Because we're talking about something 20 years ago. Wrestling schools were not, I don't want to say dime a dozen because it makes it sound like they're everywhere. They're not, but you've never had so much access to them across the country. Back then,
you type into like Google or even the search bar on Facebook or Twitter or somewhere like that, and so many wrestling schools pop up.
That's right.
You literally just type in wrestling school. There's just so many of them now.
Yeah, there is. And 20 years ago, you simply didn't have that. And no. And I was looking at, like, so, you know, I originally from Gloucester, and I was looking at, well, there's one down in Portsmouth. I could go to Portsmouth University and learn business studies and kind of do the wrestling on the side. And then eventually it was just like, look, I'm so young, I've got no money, I'm so poor, I don't have the resources and the means to make this happen. So I didn't. I was content being a fan, you know. And that was my first thought of going into it. And I've done other stuff since, like I don't want to say I'm athletic, but you know, I've run marathons and I've done other sort of like athletic stuff, which I've tried to sort of achieve and tick the boxes.
That's quite an achievement, mind a marathon. That's quite a big. I mean, that's 26 miles. I mean, I'm out of breath walking 26 yards. So don't downplay yourself at all there.
Yeah, well, it's funny because now when I do training and Dale sees me blowing hard because I'm obviously, like I said, 19 stone. He's like, "You run marathons. You shouldn't find it this difficult." But the truth is, yeah, like it's different physique, different type of training and stuff. And but yeah, I literally just the thought of actually training to do it never entered back into my mind. I was quite content being an absolute super fan and just like, you know, loving what I'm watching. It was an entertainment thing to me. I love talking about it. I love telling people about it. I've got no shame in my fandom at all. I absolutely wear it on my sleeve. And then, like I said, to be honest, Dale did it, which started to get me sort of thinking. He was even saying to me, like, "You are a 6'5" guy. You might, you know, you might have gas left in the tank to do this." And I was sort of even still like a little bit, "Yeah, but come on, I couldn't." I've got two kids, I've got a full-time job. It's like, I had no idea like sort of what would be involved. And then the crux of it was, I've said this a lot recently on like Evo videos, was COVID, funnily enough, was the thing that told me I actually needed to do it. I think when we went through that first lockdown in 2020, and it was so sudden, and our freedoms, basic freedoms, for the right reasons, don't get me wrong, but our basic freedoms were taken away from us so swiftly. It just got me thinking. There's a lot of time for reflection about life in general and what do I want to achieve? What do I want to say I've done or given a go? And I was looking at wrestling as this thing that I've watched it for so long. I've been a fan and I've never even set foot in a ring. How can I go? It'd be really sad if I went through my whole life without giving it a go at least once. And I sort of reflected on it, and I was messaging Dale saying, like, "Do you think I could go? Is this ridiculous? Could I get involved in it?" And he was, you know, very quick to reassure me that no, it's a really inclusive school. You come along, just give it a go. You know wrestling. You've watched it for as long as you have. Get involved. So I literally did for my first opportunity that when it opened back up again, the world was in a state where such things were allowed once more in the right sort of way. And I did it, and I've never looked back since. I'm there, and even the first time I stepped in the ring there, I was like marking out a little bit inside. It's like, oh my God, I'm actually stood in a wrestling ring. And you got Liam Jones, who's one of the trainers out there, like just an amazing coach for someone as young as he is. I'm taking pointers from someone who's 16 years younger than me, and he's just fantastic. And it's just that. I just never looked back, and I feel like it's one of the best decisions I've ever made. And here I am sort of 35, giving it a go, got lots of love and support from family and friends. Cause they all know how much I've been a fan in the past. I think they've all been keen to see me do it. Cause it's always been a running joke all my life. And I'm getting involved. I'm living the dream, mate. Honestly.
It sounds fantastic. I mean, it's something that I suppose every fan at some stage goes through, that little, "Oh, I'd love to give that a go" sort of thing. I mean, a few years ago, I don't know whether I was having some kind of, midlife crisis potentially, or I was looking for something to do. Well, actually, probably I was running a football club for a long time. Me and the wife knocked that on the head because it was becoming more like a job than something I was enjoying. We were relatively successful. On the last match that we were there, we won the last thing that was sort of missing, I guess, from the trophy collection at the low level that we did this at. So I knocked it on the head, and for 6 months or so, it was lovely having my weekends back and not having to take training sessions or stress about getting drunken, cider stained idiots out of bed to come and play fullback for me and so on. So that was lovely. But after about 6 months or so, I felt like I wanted to get to do something. I was very lost and very sort of, I didn't have that interest. And I started thinking, I'd love to give this a go. But I ended up bottling it. I ended up not going down that road. And still to this day, I mean, it's like I said, it's the 10th of February today. I'm 40 in 2 days. I'm still to this day, even though my kids have and my wife have, never actually stepped foot in a wrestling ring. Still, so, and I'm quite content with that. I
can't give you the elevator pitch any more than I just have. Like, it's never too late. That's all I say.
No. I think that ship has firmly sailed for me. I'm more than happy on the other side side of the rail, whether that's with the microphone for the few matches I did commentating on some of you boys, or just sat there as a fan. I'm perfectly happy where
fair
I
enough.
Am, but yeah. So when you started the training process then, and you were arriving at your first training session, was there nerves walking across the car park to go through that door? When you first walk in, were you a little, I suppose Dale was there and you knew him.
Yeah.
So did that help?
Yeah, it did. But no, I was massively nervous when I went. It's, I had been going to Evolution Wrestling shows for a couple of years. So I did know the faces as I'd watched them at the shows. I never really had any sort of, you know, conversation with them. So, and you know, naturally you're sort of thinking, well, I don't want to cock up too much. I don't want to be, I don't want to act like I know what I'm talking about, even though I've watched wrestling for a long time, because I know that's a completely different perspective. I was wary of saying the wrong thing. And Dale, to be fair, and I was quite content with this as well. Dale did say to me, look, you know, if you do too much wrong for too long, they will tell your side, you know, and they'll either work you through it or you know, they'll tell you in the right way that, you know, maybe this isn't the right thing for you. And I was content with that, because I respected that. That's because it isn't ballet, you know, it is an intense thing. So I was humongously nervous. But when I went, there was a couple of other new starters at the same time. So I had my sort of peers there that I was sort of grouped together with, and it was really great. It was like, even the simple things like learning how to bump, you'd sort of do it safely on a crash mat first, but then you'd sort of like quickly progress into like, okay, now I'm going to suplex someone, now I'm going to arm drag someone. And even then I'm like this giddy little 10-year-old again. It's got this childlike joy, like, oh my god, I'm doing it, you know. And this is the other thing, right? Because it's not like I'm used to being thrown about. Like I still regularly take my kids and up until sort of a few years ago, took little brothers to like things like trampoline parks and, you know, you go swim in. So I'm used to sort of like tumbling and doing rolls and flipping and things like that. So like some of that stuff, I had no reservation about sort of doing that, or landing awkwardly or anything like that. So that stuff I sort of had out of the way. So I could just enjoy it. I was eased into it gently, and not just the first week, but the weeks after. It was a similar story, to be honest.
Okay, great. I mean, that seems to be a familiar tale with people who are trained at Evolution. I mean, I've spoken to quite a few people who have, and I've spoken to others who are trained elsewhere, but Evolution Wrestling is the sort of higher number, I suppose, of trainees I've spoken to.
Now, the
and they all
is,
say the
right.
same thing. They were walking in nervous, but within literal minutes, it was like a sort of, one person used the term family atmosphere, and they instantly felt relaxed.
And I think the other thing you got to remember, right, so there's the wrestling product at the moment is literally unlimited, and there are so many documentaries about how wrestlers started out, the schools that they attended to, and most of it is from the perspective of people who started out in like the 80s and 90s. You know, you're talking about like things like Beyond the Ring. Is it Beyond the Ring? What's the one where they talk
Beyond
about
the mats?
Beyond the Mat, yeah, Beyond the Mat. Dark Side of the Ring, sorry.
Dark Side of the Ring, yeah.
Things like that, you know, where they're talking about how you learn, and it's always horror stories. It's like, oh, you're going to run until you start throwing up blood, or, you know, you're going to get broken in the hard way and beaten up and stuff like that. And you're like, gosh, is it really like that? And in the back of my head, I was like, is that what's going to happen? Am I going to be going in there and basically be dropped on my head a few times to sort of feel me out if I can do it or not? Thankfully the business has moved on. It's progressed a lot since then. So if anyone's out there watching those documentaries and thinking that's what it's like in 2021, it's really not. It's such a professional outfit, and it is a gentle experience to begin with. It does step up, and it does get hard, and it is very, very physical, but you're never going to be in that position where you're made to feel uncomfortable, so uncomfortable, very early on.
Okay, I mean, well, let's talk about that stepping up and how it gets difficult. But again, let's begin at the beginning, I guess. A standard question I ask everybody who comes on the show who's gone through the process that you've gone through, how was that very, very first bump? on the canvas. How did that one feel?
I actually okay. I don't know what it was. I'm totally okay with the bump on the canvas. It's a shock. I think maybe my neck was a little bit sore after for not doing it the right way. Fortunately, Dale again was very good in my ear before I got there, saying like, these are the things you avoid. Don't hold your breath, all that kind of stuff. So that was fine. I have to say though, and if I'm being really honest and being a bit vulnerable here, is running the ropes, man. The running the ropes was the biggest shocker. That was the painful thing, and still to this day, you can't do it comfortably. It's an unnatural feeling, especially for someone my size who has to really like get low when I run into it. That for me is probably more daunting than taking any bump. Not that the bumps are pleasant in any way. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, those running the ropes, I'm just, I don't know. It's just, it's something you really have to concentrate on first thing. There's a knack to it, and eventually it becomes second nature, I hope. But that's for me. Yeah. It was the rope running more than the bumps early on.
Yeah, you hear and see pictures, don't you, online, and you hear stories from people and they got marks all over their back and under their arm where they're trying to run the ropes for the first time or even the 10th time or however many attempts it may take them to get used to it. Yeah, I mean, you're literally running into something that's there to stop you and propel you back. It's going, if you don't hit it right, it's going to be sore, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the images that sort of go through your head here are like, I don't know if you're a man who's a similar age as I am, but I remember watching the very first Tough Enough series where all the trainees were sort of like standing in a row in the ring with their arms up in the air and like they all had welts just along. And
yeah.
It's like, it's exactly like that. But I suppose the reassurance you get is you look at someone, and I'm probably going off on a tangent here, but you look on like someone like Sting, who had his match against Triple H at WrestleMania 31. And he clearly not done it for a while. And now sort of watching back, I can appreciate things like he had this big red welt under his arm. And it was just from rope running. And that's someone who's been doing it for years. So even if it just goes to show, even if you know how to do it perfectly, yeah, it's like you said, it's an unnatural feeling. You're gonna stop yourself with a thin bit of rope constantly, consistently. It's gonna leave a mark.
Yeah, definitely. Very quickly to anyone listening and to you, Simon, as well. I don't know if my microphone picked up on that then, but we've got a helicopter and a couple of sirens going on outside the back at the moment in the lovely part of Gloucester I live. All the drugs you can possibly ask for. So just if the microphone is picking that up and anyone listening can hear it, I do apologize, but that's part and parcel of the area I am from at the moment, sadly.
Wow.
You say about things picking up and things getting more difficult as you went along. Where, what stage and what exactly was it you were doing that you sort of went, oh, stroof? And was there any particular moment where you thought, okay, maybe I can't do this after all?
Yeah, there was 100%. So it's, so you get into a point where you're doing drills, right? And I kind of get it, because I've been watching wrestling for a long time, and I could see that you see a lot of similarity, a lot of patterns in matches, routines, and it's like, I get it and stuff. It was the first time, if I'm looking for a moment that I thought, oh my God, maybe I'm not cut out for this. It was when I was encouraged and coached to do a dive over the top rope to the outside. So like, okay, you know, like a Shawn Michaels type, grab the top rope, launch yourself over to the person outside. Crash mats everywhere, mate. Crash mats everywhere. Very strong individual who's there to catch me. But it was like a mental block, like about like, am I going to be able to launch my 19 stone frame over the top rope in a way that isn't going to, you know, I'm going to end up landing on my head here. And I must have been there for a while. And it's comical because it was supposed to be part of a routine, right? Where the person you're training with, he's sort of playing the sort of the heel, he rolled out the ring from under the ropes, and he's sort of selling the punishment he's taken in the ring. And the idea was that he's going to walk round to the side, and I'm going to fly over the top, and he's going to catch me, and that was how it's supposed to be. And he sort of did all this selling, walking around the ring, waiting to catch me, and I'm just like, lads, I don't think I could do it. Like this is nuts. Like what am I doing here? Like this is ridiculous. And I was there for ages, and it was almost became like a bit of a seat. And this is where we go back. And I'm sorry, I know it sounds like I'm bigging up Evolution Wrestling, but the guys are just, this is the family atmosphere, right? Like I was there.
No, please carry on. Yeah, definitely.
I was stood there clutching onto the ropes. My knuckles were getting whiter and whiter. I could feel like my flop sweat, you know, coming in, and like, oh, this is intense. And Ryan guy who's catch me is just literally stood there like, are you going to do this or what? And like, and eventually everyone else there on that day was like, just sort of saw what was happening, and they sort of come around and be like, yeah, go on, Simon, you can do it. You can do it, Simon. You can do it. It's fine. You'll be fine. Liam's there saying like, look, you will not hurt yourself. Just do it how I've told you to do it. And you have to end up saying, F it. I'm gonna go for it. And I did. And I launched myself. And it was like the most terrifying experience I've so far had to do. Just unnatural. And I haven't done it again since. But I got to be honest, like I'd probably be more into it now because I've done it that once. But yeah, that high flying stuff. Oh, it's yeah. But maybe that certain element of wrestling, my frame doesn't lend itself to.
Well, I suppose being the size you are, I don't think how often would you be needing to leave your feet anyway, I guess.
Yeah, that is a fair point. You know, that being said, the whole thing with wrestling, I love just getting stuck in. I love the grappling. I love the rough and tumble of it. I mean, I'm happy to, you know, bump or take punishment however I need to. So, you know, but like you said, the size I am, maybe I'd get away with it a bit more because I'll be the one that people utilize the size of and bounce off more than me bouncing off other people. So yeah, who knows?
Yeah. All part of the fun. So, I mean, how long then, I don't know if we've covered this already, but apologies if we have, how long exactly were you training then before the first match came around?
Yeah, so I think it's probably about 4 months, but there was pockets where we stopped due to government guidelines on like local sports, grassroots sports, and et cetera. So it was on and off for around about 4 months.
Yeah, okay. And then obviously we can't discuss too much, can't go into too many details because the match that you're involved in with Evolution Wrestling hasn't actually aired yet on their social medias or their YouTube, so I don't want to be dishing out any spoilers if this comes out before that does. But your very first and to date only match was a tag contest, wasn't it? How do you feel that went? And obviously the difference is you're not walking into an arena or a room or a hall rammed full of people, are you?
The good news is I still have all that to look forward to. That's how I look at it.
Yes, like very true.
My goal, my first goal, and this is usually how these things start, right? You have one goal, you want to move on to the next one. My goal is to perform in front of people, you know, namely my kids. I want them to see me in that superhero capacity that I looked up to my heroes when I was a kid, and that's what I want, where I want to get to. Yes, my first match wasn't that, but it was still an absolute honor, privilege to get to do it. You know, I've experienced it now. I get the build up, like how it works. I've been around people backstage, how they organize it. It was still an incredible experience. And to be fair, I don't know how many of the guys there and some of the ones more experienced have had that level of attention coming from a camera being filmed. So it was quite cool in a way to sort of be experiencing that for the first time with them as well. So it was different. I'm really proud of the match. I've seen a rough copy of it and it's, you know, I've watched it about 20 million times. I'm really excited for other people to see it, but yeah, it was amazing. Really enjoyed it.
Oh, that's brilliant. I mean, you can see that as well. Certain moments in the match, just like the look on your face, you can
mark it out.
Have you heard the copy with the commentary on yet, or have they still got that ready to release it?
I haven't had the pleasure yet. I had to tell myself when I knew that was on its way, Simon. I told myself I need to stop rewatching this rough copy because I knew there was another copy on its way with your dulcet tones overlaid over the top. But I have heard your work in some of the other matches, and I was very, very impressed. So you should be proud of yourself too. I'm very excited to see what it comes out like.
You're very kind. It was literally the three matches I've recorded to date were the very first three I've ever done. And it was literally done in one take. Sit down, get it done, off we go. I think that the improvement in the last match to the first match is quite noticeable. Not trying to sort of, you know, say I'm astounding at this or anything like that, but I think I felt much more I felt much more comfortable at the end than I did at the beginning as I sort of got into a bit of a flow. But like I said, it was the first time I'd done this. It was the first time my commentary partner had done this. And also, I'm recording the commentary sat in my bedroom looking at my laptop whilst he's in a house X amount of miles away looking at a video on his laptop. We're trying to sync it together because obviously COVID restrictions, we can't be in the same room and so on.
Yeah.
So that made it a bit tricky. I do believe at one stage, though, in your match, I do refer to you as the young man. So you know, I'm expecting some little kickbacks or bribes to keep that in mind. Okay,
thanks, mate. Yeah, it's I must admit, this lockdown life is increasing the grey hair count on my head and my beard. So I do need to maybe look at investing and doing something about that. But I do. Yeah, mate. The thing is, right? I don't mind people knowing how old I am, because it sounds really like I'm trying to sort of be pretentious or like sanctimonious, but if people see someone like me who's started something so physical so later in life, and if that inspires others to give it a go, then I've done my job. You know, look, I don't have dreams for making it big. It would be amazing if it happened, like who would say no to that? But even just like to get to a certain level where I can respectfully keep up with the top guys, just even in the local area, I would be dead chuffed. That would be the next goal after the next. Here's a question for you though. One of the things I've watched recently, and I don't know if you've seen it. Have you seen You Cannot Kill David Arquette?
I watched it. Are you familiar with my other podcast? It's not been running very long. It gets shared sometimes on the social media for this one, called Chain Wrestling, and how that format works.
No, I haven't. No.
No. Okay. Very, very. You know, simply, it's me and my podcast partner, Mags, who's a top bloke. We both watch a match or a certain moment from history and so on, and just sort of poke fun at it and have a little bit of a laugh and a joke, and it's much more lighthearted and so on. Just us being daft, really, just a couple of idiots being silly. And at the end of that, we then both link that match to another match, whether it's via some real tenuous stretched link, like
nice. that
we're being ridiculous over, or we link it via the arena it was in, or the title it was for, or a wrestler who was in that match can be in the next match and whatever. And then we both put forward our suggestions, they go up on Twitter, and the listeners vote to which way we go. So in theory, episode 11 came out today as we're recording. You can trace episode 11's match all the way back to episode 1, and that's kind of the theory of it being called Chain Wrestling, so it's linking together and so on. The episode that came out today, we actually covered Slamboree 2000, the main event there, with the triple cage from Ready to Rumble with David Arquette as the champion. Much to Mags, my co-host's disappointment, he had to watch that the other day and he was not happy, as you can tell if you listen to the show. So I watched, somebody on Twitter actually said, when I said, oh, this has won the poll this week, we're going back to 2000 with Slamboree, David Arquette, etc. Somebody actually said, you need to watch this documentary. So I actually watched it for the first time a couple of days ago. And it, absolutely fantastic. The guy's passion and love for the business really shines through. I mean, it's obvious he's got some issues, whether that's dependency issues or maybe some underlying mental health problems. He's obviously got some stuff going on there. And there's obviously uncomfortable moments too when he's wrestling those backyard kids.
Yeah.
That's my wife at one stage was like, I'm not sure if I can watch any more of this, because it was incredibly uncomfortable. And then the moment where he was facing Nick Gage, I believe the guy's name was.
Yep.
And he had his neck cut quite famously. That was all over the internet. But no, I really, really enjoyed it, and I thought it was a good watch. I could recommend it to anyone who's not seen it.
Well, this is my point. Firstly, that sounds like an excellent format, your other podcast. I will be sure to check that out, because that's very interesting. The reason I brought it up, it's a fantastic story about David Arquette, you know, man who loves the business, his much famed story in WCW that you alluded to there, how that sort of panned out, and his whole redemption story. And sort of linking it back to myself here, which sounds really self-involved to sort of compare myself to it, but this guy's got 10 years on me. And as you would see at the start of the documentary, he was rough and out of shape, right? And like you alluded, he had problems And he got past them. And by the end of that documentary, you see what he's achieved. Now, obviously, he's got like name attachment and name value, and it is a fantastic story. But just the physicality, and the fact that he was in the PWI top 500 by the end of it,
yes.
Just as a 54-year-old bloke. You know what? It's like going back to the whole age thing. This is what I didn't really sweat it before, because I knew this was like I'm sort of doing something a bit crazy here for my midlife crisis, as you would sort of say. But when I watched that, I was like, do you know what? Screw that. Age is just a number. So I have got no problem at all being billed as someone a bit older doing this. That being the butt of promos, that being something that just gets turned into a story eventually. I'm more than happy to lean into it. Just because, yeah, I think it is like that documentary shows. You can achieve great things at no matter what point you are in your life.
Yeah, definitely. It is a very good documentary. I recommend anyone who hasn't seen it goes and gives it a watch. It's quite heartwarming seeing his passion and his love for the business. You say there as well about age being just a number and so on. I mean, 35's not old, is it? I mean, maybe it's a touch old to be trying this for the first time. But you've got your background of being a fan your whole life. You've got your background of marathons in the past and so on. So, I mean, you know, fair play to you. It's a really interesting story to tell, I believe. You know, maybe even half tempts me to get my broken old ass out running for a little bit, but you know, maybe not. Just before I let you go then, Simon, you say there that you're a self-confessed WWE super fan or fanboy or however you want to word it.
Yeah, all the above.
What are your thoughts at the moment on the current wrestling landscape then with regards to Raw, SmackDown, NXT as well, I guess, and any other wrestling you sort of may watch?
Good question. I think all products at the moment that are at least on TV are making the absolute best of it that they can, given the global pandemic that we're in. I think it's very, don't get me wrong, there's no substitute for an arena full of fans and being part of that immersive experience yourself, either as a live fan or watching something at TV, on TV, a big pay-per-view event, feeling like you're watching something special, you know. There's no substitute for that. And wrestling has taken a knock because of it. But that being said, like I said, they're I think the way AEW film their shows from a different angle works. They're making the best of it. Thunderdome is. You know, a bit of an intense overstimulation of the eyes, but it's better than the Performance Center. That's a quick question for you, actually. Have you been to the Thunderdome yet? Have you given that a go?
No. Have you got the sort of, I don't know how they'd word it, online ticket? Maybe, I don't know. Have you done that? Have you?
I have, mate. I have, but probably towards the end of last year. There's a roar out there where you can see my mug in the middle of.
Okay.
I think it's Bobby Lashley. Taking on Ricochet on Raw, you can see my face on it. It's a very, very unique experience, but I won't go into it now.
Please do explain. That's a question that my wife and my kids have asked me a few times. How does it work? What do you see on your side of the screen?
So so I did it on a laptop, but I understand you can do it on any device. But basically, you literally watch Raw, and you've got a little sort of camera in the corner like you do in any type of FaceTime, which shows you your screen. And how it works is you're watching it like any normal episode, but you've got a guy in your ear that's telling you how to react, when to cheer, when to boo. You know, someone comes out like Asuka. It's like, oh, everyone do your Asuka dancing or something like that. Like they literally coach you to tell you how to react and make sure you're sort of reacting in the right way. Yeah. So that was quite intense. It's also very random about how you appear in the actual arena. So Raw being 3 hours long, it took me 2 hours to actually get within shot of the TV camera. And once I did, I was dead chuffed. I was like, yep, it's all worth it. But for those first 2 hours, it was like, oh my God, like I'm sort of doing this because I want to be part of history. I want you to see my face on Raw.
Yeah.
So that part of it is a slog. It's a lot of like, you know, staring at a laptop screen for 3 hours nonstop it takes a toll. But it also there's other things as well, like you're not allowed to have any brand drinks, you're not allowed to have any brand foods, you're not allowed to move your camera, anything like that gets immediately called out, and you get like one warning, and if you sort of carry on doing it, they just boot you out. But like I said, I'm glad I do it. I haven't really got an incentive to do it again, if I'm being honest, now I have done it. But it's But yeah, it was unique. I would recommend everyone try it once. Again, live in history. This time next year, thing of the past.
That's really interesting hearing that they sort of coach you along. I think I read somewhere about that, but I didn't realize it was quite to that level.
Yeah, it is. It really is. Like, you're sort of awkwardly, sometimes, you know, being the super fan of Mark I am, I'm being asked to cheer for people I don't necessarily have a particular fandom associated with them. It's cheer for so and so, and I'm like, oh yeah, okay, if I have to, I'm doing this just because I want to get on TV, sort of thing. but yeah, it is. It's like a constant coaching. You know, applaud here, boo here.
Yeah, no, I understand. Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah, okay. Okay, then, well, as we sort of draw to a close here then today, going forward, I mean, we're going to look at this very much best case scenario with COVID being gone and everything returning to normal. The last thing I normally ask people, what are your hopes for the future with regards to wrestling? What do you, when you talk about goals and accomplishing them, what are you looking to get out of it as soon as possible?
Get as many shows in as I possibly can. I want to seize any opportunity that I can with what presents in front of me. Like I said, I'm so proud and privileged to be a part of that academy and what they're trying to achieve. Support them in any way I can. I'm going to big them up, promote them. We need more people. Not that they're struggling in any way, but we need, you know, it's welcoming. Talent is talent. Encourage people to have a go. It's a positive contribution to society. And I think I just want to be a part of it for as long as I can. So as long as my body holds out and I stay healthy, I think as the journey of the next 2 or 3 years pans out, I want to just be there and I want to be part of those shows. My long-term goals, yeah, it'd be nice to sort of, you know, I'm in fantasy land here, to just talk, just see other sides, other promotions, perform in front of different fans. That is what I'd love to do. It's what I got into it for. And that is my short-term goals. Don't get me wrong, like if there was something bigger and better on the cards, I would be absolutely amazed and work hard for that. But at this point, yeah, it's just making the best of what I can do and just putting my all into it.
Yeah, great stuff. Okay, and I hope all that happens, and I hope sooner rather than later, I can actually be in the crowd rather than sat behind the laptop, whether it's with a microphone or not, watching you work, sir. I enjoyed the first match I saw. I hope to see many, many more going forward.
Mate, as long as you're in the crowd, you're reacting in one way or another. You can boo me, you can call me a dick if you want, I don't care, but it'd be an absolute honor. So yeah, no, it's I'm really, really excited, and again, mate, thank you so much for inviting me to your podcast here. You're clearly a passionate guy, and I look at some of the names you've been having on the show previously. It's a bit surreal being in this situation even with you, so thank you for having me.
No, thank you for coming on. It's great. It's, like I said, it's a very unique story, learning, deciding to train, not just maybe, you know, not an advanced age at 35, because it's not old, but a higher number than others, potentially, plus through bloody lockdowns and pandemics. It's quite an interesting tale of how you started off. So I look forward to having you back on in the future. We can talk a bit more modern wrestling, maybe look back at some pay-per-views together, and hopefully when this whole coronavirus situation is gone, we can start talking about how your career is progressing a bit more, mate.
Yeah, it'd be my pleasure. Cheers, Simon.
Okay, have you got any social medias for yourself you want to hand out, or are you still in the process of setting those up?
I'm still in the process of setting them up. I know I've plugged it a lot, but the best way you can keep track of my media progress or any of the academy lot is literally giving Evolution Wrestling a follow. Instagram, Facebook, they're very active, talking a lot about what we're getting up to, upcoming shows when that's allowed, etc. So I would say that for that, if you're interested in my story, that'll be the first place to check out.
Great stuff. And as always, you can find me at SJP Words, and you can follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at SJP Wrestling Pod. And as always, thank you for listening.